Good afternoon. This is Bill Stout reporting for CBS Radio News. For most Americans this past week, the big news was from Chicago, where the Democratic Party strained close to the bursting point before choosing its nominees for president and vice president. But millions of Californians were concerned with an upheaval of an entirely different sort. The spotlight of their interest was suddenly, joltingly distracted from the political scene at 4:52 a.m. Monday morning. Southern California's strongest earth shock of the 20th century, the third strongest in all the state's history, came rumbling forth from the mountains of Tehachapi, about 70 miles northeast of Los Angeles. In the days that followed, the convention maneuvers in Chicago fought a losing battle with the tortured earth for the attention of Californians. Many found it difficult to concentrate on politics while the very earth underfoot shifted disconcertingly on scores of occasions. In the next 30 minutes, we hope to bring this important story into focus. In some instances, to repeat accounts from the scene of damage. In others, to explore the nature of earthquakes with the men who spend their lives studying them. And at the end of this half hour, we hope all of you will be able to rest a bit easier with the confidence that comes of removing some of the mystery from the unknown. The first violence of Monday morning's shock did most of the damage. The main business districts were largely destroyed in the towns of Tehachapi and Arvin, both in Kern County, east of Bakersfield. Older brick buildings were especially hard hit. But the state's earthquake building requirements proved their worth. The schools of Tehachapi, built under the 1933 earthquake code, suffered only minor plaster damage. The old Cummings Valley schoolhouse outside the town collapsed. It was built before the lessons of the 1933 Long Beach quake were written into law. The older buildings took a heavy toll in Tehachapi. Collapsing walls and roofs killed 11 persons, 9 of them children, and 25 others were injured badly enough to need hospital care. At Arvin, one man was killed in a gas stove explosion attributable to the quake. The survivors in the stricken area started right to work picking up the pieces. Bulldozers scraping and pushing the rubble out of the way, knocking down weakened walls before another tremor could bring them crashing down unexpectedly. At that, the cleanup crews couldn't finish the job in time. Aftershocks during the week brought down sagging walls in several towns, but there were no additional casualties. In Tehachapi, even before the initial shock wore off, the townspeople were putting their battered main street back into shape. CBS newsman Bob Ferris flew into the stricken mountain town shortly after the earthquake. We hear the bulldozers again as he tells us what he saw.
The sounds that you hear there, ladies and gentlemen, are the sounds of the aftermath of tragedy. Tragedy in the little town of Tehachapi up here in Mojave Desert, where a great earthquake struck this morning. We're standing right now in the main street of Tehachapi on Highway 466, and we're looking at the building in which 5 children were killed, along with their parents, early this morning when the earthquake struck, just before 5 o'clock this morning. At the present time now, we're looking down the length of Main Street, and we can see that most of the buildings on the main street of town, the business buildings, the hotels, the Main Street Market, and a structure known as Cowboy Headquarters, evidently a market of some sort, have been completely gutted. It looks like the aftermath of a hurricane almost. On the corner, there is a hotel, a two-story structure, an old brick structure. The entire front face of the hotel has fallen off, and it's like looking into a hotel room from the inside. There's an old frame bed standing there, and the furniture of the room, but there's just no outside wall. Now down along the length of this main street, there are piles of rubble, which could have happened from almost any natural cause or any man-made cause. It might look like the aftermath of a bombing.
Twisted walls and broken timbers are only part of the story. It's the people involved who know what an earthquake really is like. And here, Bob Ferris talks with one such person.
Here's a gentleman that I just rounded up here in one of the side streets in Tehachapi who has a big cut across his head, so apparently he really saw this earthquake firsthand. What is your name, sir?
Rockwell. I was the on the corner room where they were, they went out, the ends, both ends went out, and there was quite a bit of brick and stuff came in onto the bed, but we were very fortunate. The wife was only hurt a little, and I've only got a few scratches. There was 14 in the hotel, I believe. I'm the provider. I think there was 14 or 15. That none of them had a scratch outside of him or the wife and myself.
What hit you across the head there?
Well, that was a little, I don't know you really, but you can see the looks of the bed where I covered up. I was over the wife. I had presence of mind. I was trying to get her, I was going to pull her off to one side into the corner. And about that time, there was brick all over me. That's all I knew. And there was one piece hit her in the back that they seemed to think it may be not too serious, but she's in the hospital.
She's in the hospital, and one of the lucky ones at that. Californians outside the area of greatest damage can't help but feel lucky themselves. Millions of them were jolted from their sleep that Monday dawn. The shock was felt from north of San Francisco to the Mexican border. There were cracked buildings in Bakersfield and Los Angeles. The city hall in Monrovia, southeast of Los Angeles, was cracked so badly that it was ordered evacuated till a careful inspection could be made. That is not the pattern of a minor tremor. Yet, just how strong was this quake? How does it compare with the great California disasters of this century? We took our questions to one of the country's top authorities, Dr. Hugo Benioff, professor of seismology, the science of earth movements, at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena.
We rated the magnitude of this earthquake as 7.5. On this same scale, the Long Beach earthquake was 6.25, and the 1906 earthquake of San Francisco was 8.25. This means that our recent earthquake had approximately 100 times the energy of the Long Beach earthquake, and that the San Francisco earthquake of 1906 had about 30 times the energy of our recent earthquake.
Does all that energy that's released in the quake indicate we can expect continuing aftershocks such as we felt in the last few days?
Well, the energy that's released is gone and has no relation to that which may follow. But it is the habit of earthquakes, faults, to continue to move after the principal movement. And so all earthquakes of any size are followed by a series of aftershocks.
How many aftershocks have we had in just the past 6 days?
Our most sensitive instruments have shown until recently very nearly continuous ground motion, indicating that aftershocks were following each other so rapidly that there was no time between them. On that basis, there would be thousands of aftershocks.
But of those that could be felt?
But of those that could be felt in nearby, in towns close to the fault, there would be probably several hundred to date.
We know this much. This quake was not a product of the greatest rupture in the California earth. It was not caused by the San Andreas Fault. This is a massive twist in the fabric of our planet, running from Point Arena, north of San Francisco, all the way into Mexico. San Andreas is the world's largest and longest surface fault. But this time, the quake came from a fault at the foot of Kern County's Bear Mountain, a fault we can describe as smaller, but in the light of this week's activity, certainly not a minor one.
You say, Dr. Benioff, that the Tehachapi earthquake was not caused by the San Andreas fault, but by a lesser, minor branch fault, so to speak.
Well, this fault is really not a branch of the San Andreas, but comes up very close. It was not known as to the nature of this fault until we had this earthquake, but in view of the fact that it has produced a major earthquake, we may no longer call it a minor fault.
This fault that you speak of and the other faults you speak of as the causes of earthquakes, is there any way that a man on the ground can walk up and put his foot down and say, this is the fault, this is where the trouble began, I can see it and touch it?
Oh, yes. For example, in the San Francisco earthquake of 1906, the displacement at the fault was approximately 15 to 20 feet. That's
the sliding motion?
The sliding motion, so that when a road, for example, crossed the fault at right angles, it suddenly was displaced that amount and remained fixed in that new position. Or fences crossing the fault were offset 15 or 20 feet.
Were there any such extremes that we could see in the Tehachapi earthquake of this week?
Well, these are being studied now by a group of geologists in the field. It has been reported, however, that they have already found displacements amounting to 3 or 4 feet.
These displacements caused a number of landslides in the Kern County earthquake. One big slide completely blocked Highway 99 near Gorman, the ridge route between southern and central California. An aftershock on Friday brought down another landslide, burying a highway department tractor at the mouth of Kern Canyon. Other slides cut off railroad tunnels, and for a time, Santa Fe and Southern Pacific had to carry passengers around the earthquake area by bus. The lines connecting Southern and Central California, like the highways, were blocked. Friday's aftershock opened up cracks in the earth near Tehachapi. Some ranchers said they were big enough for a house to fall into, but scientists think this may be an exaggeration. The series of aftershocks caused serious curtailment of water from mountain streams. The streams flowed into the earth's cracks or were diverted, cutting off supplies where customarily made available to cattle. However, there was a bright spot. A lucky rancher named Dick Bright suddenly found a new spring on the mountainside of his place after the quake. In one railroad tunnel, squarely over the displacement, the tracks had been twisted into an S shape and were 10 feet shorter overall than they had been before the quake. The displacement gave farmers a lot of headaches. The rich, irrigated land of Kern County needs water, and many pipelines were snapped. In some places, wells went dry, the mouth of the well cut off from the water below by the underground shift. The big problem is the cotton crop, which needs constant watering and will be up for harvesting soon. There were even the legendary cracks in the ground, some of them up to 20 feet wide in Tejon Canyon, southeast of Arvin. But this is one of the myths the scientists try hard to put down and never quite succeed. Earthquakes may cause cracks in the ground, but only because the soil in a given area is loose to start with. Quakes do not bring cracks that yawn open and swallow houses or people. Indeed, the basic cause of earthquake is the grinding against one another of two masses of rock. There is no pulling apart, there is a pushing together. But let's hear Dr. Benioff describe this process and also tell us something about the aftershocks California has had all week long.
You mentioned slipping. I wonder if you could explain in very basic terms, as a scientist talking to non-scientists, what is this slipping? What is it that actually causes an earthquake such as the one we've experienced?
Well, the crust of the earth in this region is traversed by fractures, which we call faults. So strain accumulates in the blocks between the fractures and is stored up in the form of potential energy within these structures. Finally, the stress becomes greater than the friction of the fault surfaces can stand, and the blocks slip by each other. This then generates the earthquake. The energy that was stored in these rocks as strain is liberated as seismic waves, which move out in circular patterns, much the same as waves move out from the falling of a pebble in the water. When the fault slips, we find that all of the energy that is stored in the rock is not liberated on the first slip, but that afterward, the rock continues to slip, usually with smaller amounts. This is an effect known as elastic afterworking of the rocks. And each time, each subsequent slip produces a new earthquake. These are known as aftershocks. In general, these are smaller than the principal shock.
How long can we expect these aftershocks to continue?
Earthquakes in California have been observed to produce aftershocks varying from Over intervals varying from approximately one day, in the case of an earthquake in Imperial Valley, to 3 years. We do not know what the habit of this particular fault is, but it would appear that we may expect at least a year's aftershocks.
Is there any way of telling how large these aftershocks will be?
There is no way of telling how large. In general, they're smaller than the principal shake.
In other words, you wouldn't go out on a limb and say the worst from this particular quake is definitely over. But on the other hand, you wouldn't make any dire predictions either.
That's exactly it. It would be possible for the fault to extend further, which would, in a sense, be a new earthquake. Whether or not it would be larger or smaller, we could not predict.
Of the aftershock since Monday's quake, the one near noon on Friday was just as strong as the Long Beach earthquake of 1933. It shook down a few more bricks in Tehachapi, but no one was hurt. The mayor of Tehachapi says the nerves of his neighbors are, however, taking a beating each time an aftershock comes. They, like Dr. Benioff, have no idea whether it will be large or small. Several more aftershocks were recorded yesterday. Others may be on the quake recording machines today. The scientists think these aftershocks are following the usual pattern. None of yesterday's, it said, was strong enough to be felt nearly so far from the epicenter as the original quake was. Though, of course, on Friday, just 2 days ago, there was that stronger jolt, equal in force to the Long Beach tremor. Caltech scientists tell us that Monday's quake certainly was the second largest in Southern California history, possibly even the largest. The Los Angeles area had a violent quake in 1857, but of course there were no instruments to measure it and very few people to talk about it afterward. To see what happened in this past week's tremor, one would have to cut deep into the earth, down 10 or 12 miles along the fault that reaches the surface near Bear Mountain in Kern County. Far underground, you would come to the point where many billions of tons of rock, moved by energy built up over a period of many years, suddenly jolted free in response to the stresses upon them. The rocks on one side of the crack moved southwest toward Los Angeles. On the other side, the earth heaved up toward San Francisco. As for the intensity of this shock in the world picture, scientists say the entire earth produces an average of only 3 quakes a year stronger than the quake in Tehachapi. That 1857 quake in Southern California was the last major movement of the big San Andreas Fault in the southern part of the state. The big shift in the northern part of the fault resulted in the San Francisco quake of 1906. At that time, the fault shifted to relieve the strains that had built up over a period of years. Some scientists believe San Andreas became the fault as it is now around the year 1800. In a sense, this sort of thing is the price we pay for the other advantages of living on the Pacific coast. Because the Pacific Ocean slopes sharply off the west coast, while inland, the coast ranges and Sierra Nevada tower up to make one of the highest ranges in North America. It is this contrast, some scientists believe, this sharp difference of weight and strain in such nearness to each other, that causes faults, which are the basic cause of earthquakes. Actually, the San Francisco quake itself did not wipe out the city. It shook down a number of buildings, including the then spanking brand new City Hall, but reliable estimates put the total damage on earthquake day in 1906 at only about 1/20th of San Francisco's overall loss. In the next few days, city life broke down. Water mains were out, fires began and spread, disease spread. Only a heavy rain 3 days after the quake finally put out the fire. The toll then read, lives lost, about 700. Property damage, $400 million. One remarkable feature of the San Francisco quake was the length of fault displacement. As Dr. Benioff has told us, at some points crossing the fault proper, fences were moved so that part of the fence was 8 or 10 feet from the next picket. Walks leading up to houses trailed off into grass, 8 or 10 feet away from the front porch. In Long Beach, in 1933, the lesson was one of a quake of less than major intensity, but still causing heavy damage. The schools were particularly vulnerable. Many of them were built of brick and wood, without bracing to meet horizontal strains. And earth tremors along the surface put buildings under great strain of that sort. The quake hit in Long Beach about 6 o'clock in the evening, when the schools, luckily, were empty. It was Long Beach, too, that proved the danger of fancy cornices and overhangs on buildings. These crashed into the street in 1933 and took a heavy toll. Earthquake scientists, state officials, and builders all agree that quake damage can be held down by adequate fireproofing and earthquake precautions in all structures. The lesson of the great Japanese earthquake of 1923 drives this point home even harder. There, the quake apparently centered under the bay outside Tokyo Harbor. There, fires spread much more quickly among the poorly built Japanese buildings. The total loss of life in Tokyo and Yokohama is estimated at nearly 100,000, and much of the loss could have been prevented. Let's take time out now from our earthquake report for a kind of footnote to the work the scientists are doing. Dr. Benioff and his colleagues at Caltech have produced the closest thing we have to an actual sound recording of an earthquake. They have a tape recorder which takes in very slowly the massive impulses which move outward from the center of a quake. As Dr. Benioff said, much as the ripples of water move out when a pebble is dropped in a pond. These are the forces of motion produced by the earthquake. We can hear these impulses by playing back the Caltech recording much faster than it was made. The result is a sort of sound capsule in a few seconds' time of all the motion sent out by a quake over a period of days or even weeks. The first recording we hear is of a strong local tremor. This was recorded last December near San Clemente Island off the coast of Southern California. Sounds like distant gunfire, doesn't it? But don't think this machine can record only nearby quakes. Here is the sound record of a disastrous earthquake in Japan 4 months ago. It was a powerful shock, measured at 8 1/4 on the scientist scale, about the same as the San Francisco quake. This one caused heavy damage and a great many fatalities. Now let's listen to the Caltech recording of last Monday's Tehachapi earthquake. If you listen carefully, you will hear a kind of warning preliminary snap just before the big shock let go. The jolt on that recording was strong enough to knock out the recording machine for several minutes. The series of sharp sounds following the big one were the aftershocks Californians have been feeling ever since Monday morning. The scientists hope these recordings will give them what might be called a sound cross-section of an earthquake. From this, they hope to learn more about the strength of a given shock, its intensity, and how it affects the earth around it. It isn't an easy job, this quake studying, since most tremors originate far underground, some as far as 400 or 500 miles down. California has what are known as shallow earthquakes, fairly close to the surface. This week's Kern County jolt is believed to have been born about 12 miles beneath the surface. The San Francisco and Long Beach quakes also were shallow. About that Long Beach quake again, on the scientific scale, it was not so severe as the Tehachapi tremor this week. Yet the damage in Long Beach was staggering. More than 100 persons were killed, and the loss of lives would have been much greater if the quake had come while the hard-hit schools were filled. Fortunately, it did not, but it was a terrible quake nonetheless. This is the way Dr. Benioff describes it, plus his view of the Southern California situation as a whole.
This was a relatively small earthquake. The fault ran very close to the city and consequently produced damaged out of proportion to the size of the earthquake.
Was this the same fault that caused trouble in San Francisco?
No, this has occurred on a minor fault in Southern California known as the Inglewood Fault.
And the large fault that did all the damage up north was the San Andreas Fault.
That's right.
How about the San Andreas Fault in Southern California? How close to Los Angeles does it run?
Well, it runs through Palmdale, which is approximately 30 miles from Los Angeles. It continues through Cajon Pass and Beaumont, Banning, and down through the Coachella Valley to the Mexican border.
And the San Andreas Fault is not responsible for this past week's Tehachapi earthquake?
No, it's completely quiet.
How long has it been quiet? And can we hope that it'll go on that way?
It has been essentially quiet since 1857, when it produced a great earthquake.
Does that mean, the fact that it's been dormant that long, that we can expect trouble tomorrow or next year?
We have no way of knowing when this fault will become active again. It may be today, it may be tomorrow, it may be 50 years from now, it may be a century. We're quite certain that someday it will react again.
The best thing Californians and others living in quake areas can do is build their cities strong. The State Building Standards Commission met this past week and spent a lot of time talking over the Tehachapi school situation. As noted earlier, the modern quake-proof buildings took only minor damage. One old school in the quake zone collapsed. In Los Angeles County, where all new schools meet the code and all old ones have been revised, not a single school building suffered visible damage. The Los Angeles City Hall did suffer internal plaster damage and cracks, as did a number of other business buildings. But private homes were only slightly affected by the quake. This is an important point in Dr. Benioff's summing up of the earthquake situation in this part of the country.
Is there any way, Dr. Benioff, that earthquakes can be predicted, either as to their strength or their frequency, how soon we could expect more in California?
No, we have no way of predicting earthquakes. We know, however, that California is an active earthquake region, that it has had earthquakes for many hundreds of thousands of years in its past, and that it will continue to have earthquakes for many thousands of years to come. But the exact day or the size of the next quake is completely unknown to us.
Of course, we do know that there are continuing quakes going on all the time that most of us probably wouldn't know about unless we read about them in the newspapers or heard about them on the radio.
Yes, the state is large and the unpopulated areas are still larger than the populated regions. We record some 1,000 or 2,000 small earthquakes in the state every year.
So in saying that more earthquakes can be expected, you certainly wouldn't say that people should go out and pack up their luggage and start heading for safer regions of the country.
Oh my, no, they wouldn't know where to go. Earthquakes are possible in any part of the United States, even though we feel that about 80% of the earthquakes in the United States occur in the states of California and Nevada.
Is there any advice in this that we can give each other about worrying or fearing earthquakes?
Well, I think that the fact that we may expect to have earthquakes will reduce our fear of them. If we know that we're going to have them, we will not find ourselves unprepared when one strikes. That is to say, emotionally unprepared.
In other words, the best thing we can do is simply try to find out a little bit about earthquakes, not be frightened of them, and at the same time make sure our buildings are not of the sort that are going to rattle down the first time there's a tremor.
During the past half hour, CBS Radio News has tried to explore some of the aspects of the past week's prolonged earth shocks in California. The purpose, of course, was not to create alarm. Rather, our purpose is to offer some assurance on the basis of a factual report, mainly from the vantage point of those experts in a position to evaluate all the facts available. This has been a special report prepared by CBS Radio News. Bill Stout reporting over the CBS Radio Network.